Many people forget that Sibelius saw himself at first as a violinist, and he really wanted to be a concert violinist. But he started rather late and didn't get the kind of early training that you would need. And when he was studying in Vienna, studying violin and composition, he took an audition for the Vienna Philharmonic and was crushed when that didn't go well. And he had to sort of re-envision himself as a composer. Something about Sibelius' personality and character made it so that his compositions have a unique quality that can't be mistaken for anybody else. He was certainly influenced by his training in Berlin and Vienna, and later on when he traveled to Italy in the formation of this piece, you know, it's well known that he started writing this when he was in Rapallo, Italy. But there's something distinctively Sibelius-like in this piece, and many people have read into it that maybe it's a kind of call for independence, like a elaboration of Finlandia, which was written just a year or two before. And others have said that, no, he wants the symphony to be taken on its own sake. It doesn't have a literary influence. Well, it's a really kind of a mixed message, because in Sibelius' own notes, he writes that when he was in Italy, he was inspired by the Italian landscape and culture to write a piece inspired by either the Divine Comedy or the Don Juan story. And so he wrote these four sort of movements, which he thought as tone poems, perhaps for a Don Juan sort of maybe collection of tone poems, like he did with Kalevala, the earlier pieces that he had written on Saga and so forth. And then he realized later that this was actually the beginning of a symphony. And that's interesting, because he saw the symphony as having an incredible logic to it. There's the famous quote when he and Mahler were talking about what the symphony meant when they met in 1907. And Sibelius said that he enjoys the fact that with the symphony, there's such a cohesion of melodies, a sort of working out of a sort of inner logic, and a sort of severity about it, that it doesn't have to have external influences and so forth. And famously, Mahler replied, "No, the symphony must be the whole world. It should encapsulate everything." That quote is often used to describe Mahler symphonies as the sprawling nature that they have, but it also really should give us insight into Sibelius's symphonies too, that he saw them as more of a working out of inner logic and intelligence, as well as feeling. There's all these sort of mixed messages when you come to Sibelius. You know, are these outside connections or not? In the second movement of the Second Symphony, there are two contrasting themes, more actually, but the two main theme areas, the bassoons that introduce this sort of lugubrious, mournful theme, which he wrote the word death over the manuscript. And then later, a moment that transcends into a sort of heavenly, otherworldly sound for the strings in F sharp major, that he wrote the word Christus over the music. So on the one hand, he's saying that the symphony should have a logic to itself. It should be music that's about music. He's quoted as saying, "No, my symphonies don't mean anything. Music starts where words end." On the other hand, he has these clear influences. And then he was quoted as saying that, you know, in his symphonies, the development sections of these sonata forms that he sometimes uses and incredibly innovates, that the development is more of a spiritual development. I love that. And I really have like locked into that. And many people have commented that his opening melodies are so fragmented that in a traditional sense of the development section of music that continues to sort of maybe break apart the music and then put it back together in the recapitulation, that's not really possible with Sibelius. It's actually more of a process of combining and putting things together, like separate droplets sort of gathering into a bigger puddle. And that's kind of the process of development, as I see, too, in Sibelius' symphonies. I came to this piece after not conducting Sibelius symphonies for many, many years. And one of the reasons I was inspired to program it was that it was specifically asked for by our players. And I do like to do that. I like to get input on programming from them and to program things for them. I hadn't conducted this piece for 15 years. So I came to it sort of afresh, and it is so different. It is so hard to make sense of it at first. It seems to be strangely incoherent at times, strangely unpredictable, and then completely predictable at other times. For instance, in the first movement, as I mentioned, there are these little fragments of melodies that keep coming in and repeating. The music stops and starts a lot, and you're wondering, what's going on here? But over the course of the movement, things sort of develop a logic of their own. The order of these little fragments makes sense, and all of a sudden you realize that there is something that's sort of ordered about the unpredictable nature of it. But contrast that with the last movement. In the finale, there's a section that has a repeated endlessly repeating these scales over which the woodwinds have a sort of like incantation or dirge-like chant. And it's like the first time this appears, it only happens maybe two or three times, but the second time, this broad melody happens over and over and over again, almost like hypnotizing the listener and the player as well. You're wondering, when is this going to end? It's so predictable. It's so repetitive, unlike the first movement. And when it finally does end, it's a glorious moment, transforming D minor into D major and a sense of, you know, finally reaching a triumphant ending. It's hard not to love this music for all of its quirks, too, you know? It doesn't necessarily sound like the symphonies that we play of Brahms, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, Dvorak. It has a distinctive sound all its own. Some composers have said that one of the problems of Sibelius is that he just doesn't use traditional voice leading, doesn't use traditional instrumentation. Richard Strauss, only his senior by maybe a year and a half, once sort of, he admired Sibelius' early symphonies, but he said he hasn't mastered instrumentation yet. Well, it wasn't that. He has a different sound in his soul. For him, there's more bassoon sound. There's bassoon paired with flutes, timpani, rumbling in a way that was never done in even the Richard Strauss tone poems, even in Wagner or Beethoven and Brahms, for sure. The horns have a much bigger role. You know, so the instrumentation is different. The melodies are different. The melodies are strange and sort of elemental. I feel like he's trying to create melodies that are less personal than more personal. So many times we think of a good melody as being one that you can whistle or something like that, something that can be sung. And I feel like with Sibelius' symphonies, the great melodies, in his mind, what maybe is a great melody isn't necessarily a melody that can be sung. I mean, it's 12 repeated notes in an oboe, like in the scherzo movement of the symphony, where you have this da 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 da. It's unusual. Or the second theme of the first movement that starts with its extremely long note, followed by a quick jagged little motif. Dum ba da ba da ba da ba bum bum. That's not really singable. But there's something about that which I think he's going back to nature and the elements and that incredible influence on him. So I love this music for all of its quirks and the way that it is different. And so many times we use the word unique and we overuse it and abuse it. But Sibelius, when compared to the other composers and the other symphonies we perform, truly, it is unique. And the ending is a wonderful, triumphant moment. When I listen to it in recordings or in performances, if I'm in the audience, it's not unusual for me to cry at that end, toward the ending, when the final heroic last page comes in. It's so powerful, and I ask myself, why does the severity and logic of the symphony, as Sibelius put it himself, lead to such emotions? I honestly think a big part of it has to do with the fact that he had started this piece not as a symphony. He started it as a tone poem, especially in the second movement. There's a feeling that in the second movement of this four-movement symphony, that symphonic structure and severity and logic is sort of cast out, and he's telling a story. And it's a broad, sort of sprawling story, but it's such, the second movement could be a tone poem unto itself. It's so unusual. Particularly, I mean, the last few minutes of that second movement are so strange, with these haunting silences and quirky little fits and starts. But the whole second movement is, I think, worthy of mentioning it, because I feel like through that sort of saga that we go through of the second movement, which has its dark moments and its uplifting moments, the death and Christus, that's the movement that paints those two varying, you know, sort of pictures. When we get to the finale, it feels like we've been through more than just an intellectual exercise. And certainly the first and third and rest of the fourth movement as well feel emotional too. I feel like that there's something about the triumphant finale that harkens back to the second movement and the trials and tribulations that we experience there. And that it feels like things have finally fully completed themselves at that point.